This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Grasshopper, the virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Go to trygrasshopper.com/TV Confidential, trygrasshopper.com/TV Confidential, and save $50 on your order.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Hi, this is Bob Bergen, and you're listening to TV Confidential, folks.
Tony Figueroa and Donna Allen are with us to bring us This Week in TV History. And Tony's segment, as always, is brought to us by our friends at Story Salon, storysalon.com, facebook.com/Story Salon. What do you have for us tonight?
July 27th, 1940.
What's up, Doc?
Uh-huh. Bugs Bunny first appeared on the silver screen in A Wild Hare.
You did a couple of years ago, you did an extemporaneous history of the Bugs Bunny cartoons.
I wish I could remember what it was.
I think it was an anecdote.
I remember one person had the philosophy that Bugs Bunny is who we want to be and Daffy Duck is who we really are.
I think that's what we're talking.
That was, you know, just as a character study. I kind of also laid that out with Andy Taylor and Barney Fife also, that we try to be like Andy, but we're often more like Barney. And yeah. I think, you know, Bugs and Daffy also
that must
have
be,
that.
That must be what I'm thinking of.
And it's, you know, we've had a lot of people – you come up with variations of that, but I think Bugs really does stand out because there are moments where everybody would like to be like him when you are facing a problem. Now, sometimes Bugs just was bored and he just wanted to screw with somebody, you know, just because he had nothing better to do, which probably are the best of the cartoons.
Hey, how human is that?
Yes. Yeah. You got nothing better to do, and so let me go out and see what I can get into. But oftentimes, he's minding his own business. Somebody is hunting. And
killed a wabbit.
Killed a wabbit. What's Opera Doc? Which was, you know, that was, you know, a little bit later on, but still. And Rabbit of Seville, also yes. Another brilliant one. But just some of the bits that you would have with Elmer and Bugs.
And remember, the original Warner Brothers shorts were done for the big screen, but then a few generations later, we grew up with them on Saturday.
Yeah.
In my case, Saturday and Sunday morning. And, I mean, Bugs Bunny growing up was a hero to me.
Oh, yeah.
He could do no wrong. He was funny. He was smart.
And going back to the previous topic, he was comfortable with his sexuality, and he could do drag. And nobody ever questioned.
And he could work. He could work in his birthday suit.
Yes, he was very comfortable in his own skin, so yes. To speak.
What's your favorite Bugs Bunny cartoon?
I just remember you mentioned Saturday and Sunday. In some markets, they were, you know, some of the classic ones were shown every day.
Oh yeah,
so, yeah. I mean, the ones that were for theatrical release would show. You know, in local markets, you know, Captain Andy's Cartoon Cavalcade, and you would have, you know,
Cincinnati,
the Bugs Bunnies.
Cartoon-a-go-go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here in L.A., Tom Hatton had a Popeye, and then you had other guys, Engineer Bill and Sheriff John. And so, yeah, Channel 11 would have, you know, the Bugs Bunny ones, at least three.
You know. And then Saturday morning network television, I believe it was primarily on ABC, the Bucks.
CBS had it later.
CBS had it later.
Yeah, as, CBS and ABC alternated, yeah.
Yeah, so CBS had it as the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner show.
Mm-hmm. Or there are different incarnations of it, the Bugs Bunny show, the, was there a Bugs Bunny comedy hour?
I think that, there's I, that, I think Bugs and
lots
Daffy.
Lots of repackaging.
And, yeah.
But they were all the classic Warner Brothers shorts that were fantastic. I saw them in black and white. I didn't see them in color till I was a teenager or even an adult. They held up in black and white.
Yeah, yes, they were. Now, you asked your favorite, and I think there were three that all had the same theme, Rabbit Seasoning, Duck Rabbit Duck, and Rabbit Fire, that were all the Rabbit Season, Duck Season one. So there were three cartoons there. And I think those are my favorites because you had basically routines with Bugs and Daffy and then Elmer. So you did have the rabbit season, duck season, rabbit, but one of them ended with, well, do you want to shoot him now or wait till you get home? and then it ends with, oh, no, you don't. Not this time. Wait till you get home. And they're playing Home Sweet Home and you just see, you know, Elmer escorting Daffy to his cabin in the woods. And he stepped into the cabin and boom! But you had that one.
My favorite, Water, Water, Every Hair. When his rabbit hole floods and he ends up in the castle of a mad scientist and there is a monster.
Gossamer.
Oh, Gossamer, funny.
This giant hairy monster with tennis shoes. And that was hysterical.
I can't think of a favorite Bugs Bunny cartoon off the top of my head, but as long as we're talking about the Warner Brothers cartoons, which are also part of those Saturday morning or weekday staples. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites, and I forget the name of the character. For some reason, it's either Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah,
Foghorn Leghorn.
It's either Foghorn Leghorn. I think it's Foghorn Leghorn and the Coyote. The cartoon begins with the two of them like punching a clock.
No, that was
the sheepdog.
The sheepdog. Okay. It was Sam and Ralph, where they made a wolf character, Sam Wolf, which was Wile E. Coyote with a red nose.
Okay, all right, that's
slightly different coloring,
and he spoke.
Yeah, he spoke, and then you had Ralph the sheepdog, and yeah, they would always clock in,
and then you spend the next 7 minutes, you know, one's trying to kill the other because it's part of the day.
Yeah, because the wolf is supposed to get the sheep, and the sheepdog's supposed to protect the sheep, and somewhere in between they take a lunch break.
Yes, they take a lunch break, and then they clock back in, and at the end of the day, they either stop just before, you know, doing harm to the other, or it's 5 o'clock. And
they carpool.
And they carpool. I know. Yeah.
See you tomorrow.
Yep. So that was the brilliance of it. And I think later on when Steven Spielberg did Tiny Toons, Animaniacs, Freakazoid, and several of those, they were really done with the spirit of the early Looney Tunes, the Chuck Jones, Tex Avery, the Frizz Freleng direction, because as they became made for commercial television, when they were no longer being made to open a Warner Brothers movie, they did get a little watered down. And so I think the essence they were able to bring back.
And then remember in the 60s and 70s, a lot of parents groups were concerned about the violence. I was embarrassed several times during my childhood when I would hear my mother on the phone on Saturday mornings calling one of the network affiliates to complain about the violence on television. But, Mom, they're cartoons. It's not real. Every year. And I believe several of the Warner Brothers cartoons fell into her description of violence. They were, but it was funny. It wasn't real.
Well, it's the same sort of criticism that some of the Three Stooges shorts came under fire for, with the poking of the eye.
Moe had one of the last things he did was he was on Mike Douglas' show, and he's reading a letter from like the top, the head of the Board of Education. I mean, like the highest teacher in the land, that basically said, you're not at fault. It's the parents' job to make sure they kids don't copy what you guys did.
And maybe I was a strange child. I watched the Stooges shorts because there was nothing else on. I was a girl. I wasn't supposed to like them. I never realized they were violent. They were funny.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I never saw them as violent.
There were people doing cartoons. When I was a kid, and I guess it's just because where I grew up, we were trying to figure out how they shot it. Because we assumed that all of the sound effects was just done slightly off camera. There was a guy with a hammer and a cymbal. Because we knew that Curly was hit with a rubber hammer.
Yeah.
And we just thought that somebody did the noise just off camera, that they had to sync it. We didn't realize that there was something called post-production.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to the Looney Tunes, I am a huge fan of World War II era comedy, especially stuff that was trying to rally morale. And Warner Brothers did so many wonderful and amazing cartoons during that period. They not only did it for theatrical release that the general public saw, they made a whole series of cartoons just for the service personnel that were under the guise of education.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it was in cooperation with the Armed Forces Motion Picture Division, which you have to realize, when the military did their own work, people didn't pay attention and people got hurt. People died because they didn't pay attention to that one little movie about how not to get blown up or how not to get VD or something like that. And then when Hollywood started doing it for them, there was a noticeable decrease in accidents and death. And so John Ford did several of these, and Warner Brothers did a whole series called Private Snafu.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of they were very funny, but they all had some theme, how to avoid a booby trap. And you can imagine the double entendres there.
Well, it goes back to sometimes if you use a form of popular entertainment, mm-hmm. if it gets the target audience's attention, mm-hmm. that just sometimes that's like, the most effective way to do
it. Yeah, how to keep a secret. What do you do if you go home? You know, when you're being discharged and you're back in civilian life, what do you not talk about? Things like that. And they had some wonderful ones there.
Yeah.
But
there's probably some subjects you couldn't do with a cartoon. Like I don't think you could do a training film on PTSD with Bugs Bunny.
No, I don't think you could do that with Bugs Bunny or Private Snafu.
Yeah.
But the ones for the theatrical release, I remember seeing them on Channel 13 here. Channel 11 had the ones that came post 40s, more from the 50s. But then Channel 13 had like some of the very early Looney Tunes. So if we're talking 1940, so pre-World War II also. But they also had the rights to all the ones where Bugs Bunny is facing off with Hitler. And, you know, one of their most historic ones was, see, I'm even afraid to say the title now, which is Bugs Bunny Nips the Nips, which was...
Yeah,
which we all grew up watching, and then they were pulled out of circulation back in the 80s, and they're very hard to find now.
Yeah. They're no longer in the syndication package. When laser discs were new, Warner Brothers released the Golden Age of Looney Tunes, and it was a whole series, and it covered, you know, 5 decades of Looney Tunes. And each one was dedicated to a decade in the 1940s, featured a lot of these cartoons. And there was
actually
a lot
that was
of
the complete series on LaserDiscs. The complete, so this was everything.
LaserDiscs, which were to the size of like a 33 LP, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
So they were DVD, but bigger.
They're just bigger.
And DVDs. You had to take them out and flip them over in many cases.
Yes.
But you had all of this stuff in a much nicer digital quality. But when the series that covered 1940s came out, there was backlash.
And as I remember, it was recalled.
Yeah.
So they could remove those offensive cartoons. I remember one argument said, how dare you release these to children? To which I wanted to scream, no, just because it's animated doesn't mean it's for children. The original Warner Brothers cartoons were not written for children. Yes, children can enjoy them. Adults enjoy them on a different level.
But they were written, yeah, exactly,
right,
for adults.
Because they're shown at the movies.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think also it's not shame on Warner Brothers, it's shame on the retailers. So if they put it next to the Best of Strawberry Shortcake, you know, then shame on them, because it should be in a separate shelf, on a separate bin, in a different category. Not everything animated was intended for children, and that's
And that holds true today.
Yes. That definitely holds true today. But Bugs Bunny is one of those characters still around, still relevant, has inspired, I think, a lot of people to go into the art of animation. And there's one person we should not forget, Mel Blanc.
Who was the first of all of them?
Just about. I don't think the success of Bugs Bunny would have been what it was. Yes, we have to give the proper credit to Chuck Jones, Friz Freleng, Bob Clampett, Tex Avery, and anybody else who drew on a page or had a piece of paper in the typewriter. Leon Schlesinger, all of those guys. But then you have to give just as much credit to Mel Blanc, who did that voice, and so many other characters in the Looney Tunes stable of talent over at Termite Terrors at Warner Brothers. So, yeah, but the catchphrases, ain't I a stinker, I should have stayed in bed, what's up, dog of course, but all of that, none of that would have been possible, I think, you know, if it wasn't the proper collaboration of all of these talented people.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
45 years of the Rockford Files, revised 3rd edition, the complete history of the Rockford Files on television, now completely updated with more than 20 new interviews, additional photographs, and a whole lot more. 45 years of the Rockford Files, available now at rockford45.com, rockford45.com.
Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or @TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.